Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, you know, I have been in business for 11 years now. I'm a small business owner. I'm a bootstrapper. I've never taken out a loan. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I have two small kids. And you know what? I don't do everything myself, but I do just about everything myself. I do have some assistants that I've trained to do some things, but it took me a long time to get to that point. And that's why the guest on today's show and his book really inspire me so much. Let me tell you who we're going to be talking to today. His name is John Warlow, and he is the author of Built to Sell, Creating a Business That Can Thrive Without You. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, actually, a speaker, a writer, and an angel investor. And he has started four companies, the most recent of which was a business he tried to sell, only to be told that he was too involved in the business personally. The business depended too much on him for him to be able to sell it. And that was part of the inspiration for his book called Built to Sell, which is all about empowering you to create a business that can thrive without you. John, welcome to Indie Business Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, you guys, I want to tell you first, I don't always do this, but I'm going to do it this time because this book is really, really good. And even though it's called Built to Sell, don't feel like you have to have as a goal to sell your business. To decide that this book might be for you. It's really an excellent book for any business owner, whether you want to sell your business or not. And we're going to talk about why. But, John, let's just open things up a little bit. But tell us a little bit more about that story. So you've been an entrepreneur for a long time. You had a really good business that looked like it was, you know, worth a sell, right? And someone said to you, all roads end with you, so we're not interested. How did that work out?
Yeah, it was a tough message to hear. It's kind of like telling the new mom that her baby's the ugliest in the maternity ward. I think as business owners, we all, you know, think our companies are so valuable. But in reality, it's only valuable to a third party if your company can thrive without you actually being there every day. And I went to see a mergers and acquisitions professional, a guy who sells businesses, and I said, you know, what do you think it's worth? And he said, well, it depends on the answer to two questions. Question number one, you know, I was in the research business, and he said, well, who does the research? And I said, well, you know, I'm still involved in it. And he said, okay. Question number two, who does the selling? And I said, well, my name's on the door. I still do some of the selling. And he said, well, I can't sell your business. It's worthless. And, again, telling someone their business is worthless is a tough message to hear. But over time, with his coaching and other people, I sort of changed the business model, and that's kind of what I write about in the book. How do you change a business model so that it could be a more successful business as well as one that somebody might like to buy one day?
Well, I'm glad you ended on that note because I can hear my audience of very small business owners going, oh, my goodness, I do everything. My business will never be worth anything. But what you're saying is that that's not true, and there are some specific things you can do as you grow to change that, right?
Yeah, and in fact, the number one reason I think you want a company that's built to sell has nothing to do with selling your business. It has everything to do
right.
with the fact that a company that's built to sell is way more fun to run, way less stressful because it's not demanding of you every minute of the day. And you can grow the business beyond that ceiling that holds back a lot of entrepreneurs. And that ceiling is kind of invisible, but it's there, and that is it's just the 24 hours in the clock. Because if all we do is sell our time, essentially, then when you run out of time, there's nowhere to go. You can't grow your business. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies just hit that plateau, and they can't mm-hmm. go beyond it. And it's because, again, that in many times the business is too dependent on them.
Well, and, you know, I'll tell you, as you know, that a lot of our listeners today are manufacturers of products. So the really super good news for them is if they can find someone to make the products with and or for them, so they're not doing all the making and they can focus on leading a sales team, that they are perfectly positioned to grow a business that does what you said, because they've got a product, you can make it over and over again on a scale that increases year after year as your business grows, and each year you end up freeing a little bit more of your time.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the challenges with product companies, if you're a manufacturer of something, is that most product companies at one point or another become commoditized. And it's the opposite problem for service companies. Service companies rarely get commoditized, but service right. companies are very dependent on their people. And so what I've said in the past is that for service companies, they need to really figure out how to productize their business. And mm-hmm. for product companies, they need to actually add a layer of service so that there is a distinguishing or differentiating factor to the company. You kind of have the whole egg in that case. So I think it's a different problem that service companies have than manufacturing companies have.
I am so glad that you said that, because, and I'm going to repeat that maybe using different words, because what you said I think is just so critical, and it's, I think today, John, even more important than in years past, because of the economy. And there are so many people out there who never wanted to have a business, that never interested them, they never thought about it, and they're suddenly finding themselves in a position where they have to think about it. So for those people who literally, John, as you know, they do start doing everything, and their only other choice is not to eat, right? So you have to you have to start where you are, right? And you're saying that even if you start in that position, there are things that you can do to move from that position so that you're not sort of handcuffed to your business for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and the first step is to really start to scrutinize what you sell and filter it down and try to focus it on things that meet three criteria. And I call it the trifecta of scale. But it's things that are teachable to employees, or you can program technology to deliver. So they've got to be teachable. They've got to be valuable in the eyes of customers. It can't be something that's commoditized where you're responding to RFPs. So it's got to be teachable, valuable. And the third and probably most important thing or element of a good idea is that it has got a reoccurring revenue cycle to it. So it's repeatable, meaning customers have to come in and purchase on some sort of regular cadence. And it's those three things, teachable, valuable, and repeatable, that I would – start to think about it. In the early days, Donna Maria, I mean, as we both know, having started businesses, you do everything, right? I mean, everything, you just get it done because there's no one else to delegate it to. But as soon as you can in the process, start to isolate of all the 100 things that you sell or whatever, 10 things that you sell, try to find one that meets that three criteria, because that's really, in my experience, the foundation on which you can build a business beyond just you. Finding something that's teachable, valuable, and repeatable.
Okay, so good. So let's talk about teachable, valuable, and repeatable in a little bit more detail, starting
sure.
with teachable. Building a business that offers products you can teach other people how to make or mm-hmm. other people how to deliver if it's a service-based business. Share maybe an example or two of people who have done that. Again, people who started doing everything themselves, and how did they, you know, share just a little story of someone who did that.
Yeah, so Jim Hinman is a good example. Jim started off in he had a service station where you get your car fixed. So people would bring their car in, and you could add, oil changes, gas or brake jobs, transmission overhauls, all the nuts. And he looked at his business and realized how dependent it was on him personally. And he said, there's got to be a better way. I've got to be able to teach some of this stuff to other people so I don't have to work, 365 days a year. And he did this kind of scrutinizing all of the things that he sell, and he realized the one element of his business that he could teach other people to deliver were oil changes, because it was a simple enough service that he could actually hire kids in school to do the oil changes. It's a simple enough process. And so he went about focusing his business on oil changes. Well, the end of the story is that the business he ended up starting was Jiffy Lube. And Jiffy Lube, as you know, goes on to be a wildly successful company, because Jim was the same guy, but he was able to find something in his business that scaled up and allowed him to replicate himself. If he was doing all of those things, you can't teach a 16-year-old kid in high school how to do a transmission overhaul. Jim could do it, but you can't teach a 16-year-old. So it's really isolating something that again is teachable. I mean, I'll give you another example. There's a photographic studio in England called the School Photography Company, and all they do is school photographs. So the neat thing about these guys is because they just do those school photographs, we've all sat on the bench for it, actually have done, they've taught their young photographers, many of which have just graduated from university, how to do, how to follow their formula. And as a result, they're in the photography business, generally speaking, an industry that's not very scalable, very dependent on the personal, the proprietor of the business. But
right,
they've been able
right.
to scale up their business.
Okay. Okay, good. So again, you're giving examples of people who started doing everything themselves and identified something discreet that they could start with to teach someone else how to do. So let me ask you this. Do you notice that a lot of very small business owners who really feel vested in their business, right, John? Because it's, you know, for our audience, for the listeners of this show, it's not all about making $1 million. It's about being fulfilled. It's about doing something you love. And they love doing what they do. A lot of them have trouble letting go and delegating and giving their secrets, quote unquote, to someone else. And I know there's a lot of legal issues involved there, and I don't want to go into those. But what I do want you to do is to encourage those people that delegating does not mean giving away like pieces of your soul where your business is concerned. Can you talk a little bit about how some of the people you've seen have overcome that connection that sort of keeps them trapped?
Yeah, you know, I think I know what you're saying, and it is oftentimes serving a customer or figuring out something in your business can be enormously rewarding. But in the end of the day, you're not moving your business forward, in my experience, if you're the one, you know, doing the work itself.
Okay.
And I just encourage people to think about what a fascinating kind of intellectual project it is to build, to inject your creativity and your need for kind of stimulation into building a business as opposed to serving a customer. It's a slight nuance, but it actually requires you to really change the way you think about your business. Instead of sort of actually, Michael Gerber was the guy who originally coined the term working in the business instead of on it. And really that's what I'm talking about. You know, I had a coffee the other day with a guy who has a great business, and he, and I said, you know, do you ever want to sell it? And he said, no, this is my sandbox. I love, I love playing in this sandbox. We all played in sandboxes as kids, but he wasn't talking about, you know, serving individual customers. He runs an internet site, and when he thinks about his business, he literally thinks about it at 30,000 feet in thinking about what changes he might make to the business as opposed to serving a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very different kind of mentality, and I think it's an important shift to make.
That's a good point, and it's succinct, and it's clear and understandable for even the newest entrepreneur. So thank you for sharing it in those terms. All right, let's talk about the second one, valuable. You say, avoid price wars by specializing in doing one thing better than anyone else. Can you elaborate a bit?
Yeah, by all means. So, I mean, for something to really to scale up, you need to actually control your gross margin. So gross margin, obviously, is the price you charge for your product or service less the costs of actually, you know, making the product or service. The only way you can control the gross margin is if you actually control the pricing for your product. And the only way to control the pricing for your product is to stay out of price wars. Now, if you call yourself a printing company and all you do is offer a service that 9 other companies in your local town offer, printing services, the only way a customer can make that decision on which printing company to choose is by price. Right. If all you're doing is responding to RFPs, requests for proposal, you're never going to actually build and own your gross margin because people just buy on RFPs, generally speaking, based on price. And so what you need to do is develop a unique offering that's distinguished, unique in the way you name it, unique in the way you deliver it. So that you can't compete. No, there is no competition because you've made your business unique. I mean, I'll give you a quick example. Years ago now, I used to own a research company, and we used to be in the business of doing focus groups. Well, I got into focus groups when it was a great business to be in. We charged roughly $6,000 for a focus group. You stick 8 people in a room and tell a client what they want to know about their product. We used to charge $6, and maybe it would cost us, give or take, $2,000 to actually pay for the cost of goods sold. So we've made $4,000 per focus group. It was a great business, lots of margin. Well, as the business got more popular and more research companies started doing focus groups, we had to start reducing our price. We had to start responding to RFPs. I remember one in particular for a big phone company where we responded to the RFP and we didn't win the job. And I went back to the guy and said, "Well, what was the winning bid?" And he said it was something around, I can't remember the exact number, but for intents and purposes, around $3,000. So the company who won was only making 33%, $1,000 per focus group on doing the focus group. That's before paying for your salary, for your rent, for your phone, for all of your other expenses. They had reduced their gross margin down to 33%. It was a business that we couldn't be in anymore. And so I said, how are we going to change what we do? And I decided that we would change the research that we did. We got into the business of doing advisory panels, which had a different complexion to them, less competitors in there. We named it. We developed the unique process around it. And we're able to kind of control the margin. We were able to get back to where we were used to having nice fat margins before. But it's an example of where, if you're commoditized, it's very difficult to kind of control the pricing on what you sell.
Well, and, John, speaking to that, in today's environment where social media is so important and so easy to use for small business owners in particular, at least in terms of the financial cost involved, which is often nothing. What I'm seeing, and I wonder if you are, John, is a lot of people who are using themselves as that differentiator. In other words, to avoid being commoditized, my product being commoditized, because it is similar to what other people are selling, and I'm very small, so I don't have $1 million to differentiate it with, fancy packaging, at least not right now. One of the things that I'm seeing people do is use who they are as a person, use their personality, their videos, and other sorts of things that other people really can't compete with because only they can be them. I'd like your comments on that in today's market, again, with small businesses who are literally bootstrapping because they're really just starting out in their first 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I think it's dangerous. I think if you're using, it comes down to, at the end of the day, what's your Twitter handle? Is it at Joe Blow or is it at Bob Joe's Plumbing? I mean, do you use your company name in your social media, your Facebook page, your Google Plus page, or your Twitter handle? Or do you, ultimately use a company name or a personal name? I just think it's kind of dangerous to be so wedded to a personal name, to have your personality so injected into your business that that's the only way you can differentiate yourself. I think there's other ways to differentiate a company. I mean, I've interviewed.
I'm not saying that they're using their names. I'm just saying they're using a brand name. But one of the differentiators, not the only differentiator, but one of the differentiators, okay, here's ABC Health and Beauty Company. Here's what we sell. We all kind of know that there's a lot of health and beauty products out there, both made by huge companies and also made by small ones. So what social media is allowing them to do is to, go on Facebook and post a picture of themselves with their products, or maybe they're in their manufacturing room, or maybe they're with their team, on a team outing or a picnic or something, taking a break from making all your fantastic products. So I'm not saying that they're using their names. I'm just saying that one of the differentiators that they are taking advantage of, not fully, not becoming their business, but using that as a way to attract people's interests and people's, different personalities to find out more about what you have to offer by virtue of meeting you and saying, wow, what a nice person. I think I'll like that page and let's see what she offers. Does that make
sense? Yeah, I understand the strategy. I understand people doing it. I think it's a mistake. It's not a mistake. Let me restate. I don't think it's a mistake to want to build a business on social media and using that as one of the feathers in your quiver in your I can't remember the expression. Arrows in your quiver, whatever. But when an acquirer looks at a company, they look at it in very cold and hard terms, and that is, will this business be able to succeed without the owner? And if the owner, even if your business is very small, but you have the aspiration to build it into a valuable company, if you build it on the back of your personal brand and your personal social media footprint, mm-hmm. it will never be valuable to a third party.
Okay.
And to some extent, you will never be able to take a great vacation because you can't turn off social media in the same way that you can other marketing. So I'm not saying don't use social media. I use it to promote my book. It's part of what I do. But mm-hmm. I'm mindful that my company is not necessarily a sellable company as it is now. My former company did not use social media in the same way because, again, that wasn't the headspace that I was in. I was hoping to build a valuable company that was independent of me. So okay. I just really encourage people to mm-hmm. to take caution. I mean, I talked to Tim Ferriss about this. Obviously, huge social media footprint, an amazingly successful guy. He never used his social media footprint to help promote his company, BrainQuicken. It was a vitamin supplements business. He sold that company in part because it was never tied to his personal brand. It was a company that he wanted to have and be successful without necessarily him personally doing everything. So, I think people like Oprah have much less valuable companies than they would if they hadn't ingrained themselves so totally in their brand.
Right.
Like Harpo
right.
Entertainment as a company is less valuable without Oprah than it is with her. And
that's,
so while she's a wildly successful person,
Yeah, it makes
still,
me think about people like her and Martha Stewart as well. Of course, from my perspective, sometimes it's like, well, gee, there's enough value there without them.
There's a problem.
There's
an amazing
stuff.
But to have.
I love your point because every business is different, and I'm so glad that you're making this point because it really does make it easy for all of us to start thinking about this if you haven't already, breaking it down this way because it's an issue. And so what we don't want to do is put our heads in the sand. And if you do make the decision that John's recommending you not make, at least you make it as an informed decision, right, John, so that you can not just be doing it without knowing the potential downside for the future of your business.
Yeah, and maybe it's the kind of thing where you say, okay, I'm gonna get our first whatever $100,000 of sales
right.
using my social media, using my connections,
right.
and then I'm gonna start dialing it back intentionally
yes.
because I know that my aspiration is to build a valuable company.
Yes, you have to dial it back. I love the way you said that. You have to make a shift, and I'm thinking as I'm watching other people go through this. And honestly, myself to some extent, that shift can't be sudden. That shift has to be something that's planned and strategized. And you can't just announce one day, oh, by the way, 100,000 people, I'm changing everything today.
Yeah.
You have to be really careful. So really, really good advice. And again, everyone, I encourage you to get John's book so you can really get down into the nitty-gritty about this and apply what he's sharing to your business because like any other book, John can only share, generalities and he can share stories, but you have to look at this from the perspective of the details that you only know about your life, that you know about your business, and that you know about your goals that you have for your life and your business. So let's look at number three, John. We've talked about having things that are teachable. We've talked about having things that are valuable, so your products are not commoditized. Very good. And thirdly, you say repeatable. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so very simply, a company to be valuable needs to have revenue coming in on autopilot. Like while you sleep, your business has got to be generating revenue. And that's a very, very high bar to climb over, but it makes companies very valuable. So in my experience, there are lots of different forms of reoccurring revenue, lots of different models you can use. I mean, for people listening, membership sites have become very, very popular now where for a premium sort of level of content, people can subscribe to your membership site where monthly there is a revenue stream coming in. Clubs can do this. You see, we've all looked at, gyms, health clubs, et cetera, have the kind of annual contracts, wireless phones.
Right.
I'm a member of a wine club, so you know every year I re-up my membership in a wine club, and they send me bottles of wine. So those are all examples of reoccurring revenue models.
Yeah. Okay.
But those
great. So
those are
wonderful too. Teachability, products that are teachable that you can teach other people how to do. Creating value beyond just the product you sell, and you know, generating recurring income. And you know, it's so interesting today too, John. We hear so much talk about generate recurring income, make money while you sleep. This really is something that needs to be strategized, right? I wrote a blog post over the weekend at Indie Business Blog about this. That there's so much talk out there about multiple streams of income and recurring income and making money while you sleep that I think some people are thinking, well, I'll just flip a switch and multiple streams of income will come. But one of the things that your book points out in this discussion as well is that there has to be an asset there. There has to be something there from which that income generates, obviously. Someone owns an asset somewhere if there's money being made, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not fly-by-night stuff. This is, you've got to have a value proposition that customers want. I mean, when you get down to it, every customer would rather not have the tether of a reoccurring model. So from a customer's perspective, you've got to provide them with some tremendous value that they are willing to give you a monthly contract. I mean, we all know when Apple launched the iPhone, I guess it was the 3 now, they're on
right.
the 4.
Right.
You know, they were locked in with AT&T Mobility, and AT&T would not give you an iPhone unless you subscribe for a 3-year subscription, 3-year plan.
Right.
So there was enough consumer demand for iPhone 3 at the time of its launch that AT&T could get away with that. Not everybody, every company could. But the question is, like, what are you going to do that is so powerful and so compelling to your audience that they're, to them it's worth it to buy on an annual or contract basis as opposed to kind of on a one-off basis.
Yeah, and I love that. If you think about companies that sell fruit, you have the monthly fruit plan, which, you can, apples in August or whatever it is. So you have the monthly plan that you can buy. And I'm seeing a lot of my members at the Indie Beauty Network who are health and beauty products manufacturers who are also having – the Sugar Scrub Club, for example. This is just an example where every month you get a new package of this particular product delivered to you, and it's always freshly made, and it's like the scent of the month, and so it's a nice little surprise. And the manufacturer, my member, manufactures a bit of it, and they can charge a little bit more of a premium for it too, because it's a limited edition, so to speak. So being creative like that is what you're talking about, right?
It is, yeah, being creative. And, I mean, there's got to be, or exclusive. In that case, it sounds like the club members get something that other people don't. You couldn't buy off the street or in a retail environment.
It's a limited edition. You can't get that product any other time unless you subscribe. So, and I would imagine social media could help that along a lot because, you could ask your subscribers to post to your Facebook page when your new – limited edition lemon product or whatever it is arrives. And so then you get them to let other people know what they could have if they subscribe. So many different things that you can do. And I thank you so much for sharing. Now, coming to the end here, John, I want you to tell everyone where we should go to follow you or learn more about you. Where on the web do we go?
BuiltToSell.com.
Okay, great.
It's the best place to go, and you'll get, if you want to, follow me on Twitter. That's at John Worlow. But BuiltToSell.com, and you can read all about the book and all that good stuff.
Good. We're going to check you out there, everyone. Facebook.com/BuiltToSell as well. Really easy for everybody. Our audience, just so you know, John, a lot are on Facebook. So that's the place to go if you're on Facebook listening live. And I see you guys there posting some comments. John, they're saying that they're really enjoying this information and they haven't thought about business in this way before. So we thank you so much. Head on over to BuiltToSell.com or Facebook.com/BuiltToSell to get more information and click through on links to buy this fantastic book. Thank you, John, so much for joining us. I'm very excited that we're here. This was very enlightening. We'll see you guys next week right here for another edition of Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.